Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Before we begin this episode, just a disclaimer that there is some inappropriate language, all from Swanee. Hey everyone, I'm Mainthi Langabini and thank you so much for joining us on the Players Lounge podcast. We're going to be joined by the world number one T20 batsman, but first up we're joined by Graham Swan. Swanee, it's great to see you and you're back in a hotel room doing another quarantine. How have you been?
Yeah, obviously the IPL being suspended, which has been a big shame, but I think the right call. With everything going on in India, India's down on its knees at the minute and needs to get back, and it's a great country and it will, but with the IPL being suspended, there was a sudden scramble for flights. I delighted in all the Australians not being able to go straight back home because it was funny from my point of view.
Aren't they in the Maldives though, Swanee?
Yes, they went to the Maldives and got a free holiday, but Aussies being Aussies still moaned about it. It's all fun. Luckily... I was able to fly home, and so I'm sat in a hotel room in Birmingham, just outside Birmingham Airport, doing another 10 days quarantine. It's tough, it's hard. I've been doing a lot of this for a long time, and I can't wait to see my family who are just down the road, and it's just about a week away. So, yes, but I'm good. How are you?
Good. Me personally, good. But as you mentioned, you know, times are tough. It is really devastating to see what's going on back home. And of course, although you were in the bubble, you're not oblivious to what people are going through at the moment. And you yourself, everyone in the world has kind of experienced this. And the sad thing is, I don't think I know a single person right now that hasn't been affected or hasn't lost someone. So the thing is though, Swanee, to see normal people, citizens, just coming together, galvanizing into action to help others around them has been the most heartening thing so far. So, you know, everyone is just trying to do a little bit of what they can. And, you know, that's the spirit that I hope will continue in what have been, you know, really the darkest times. And I'm sure you felt it. I mean, you have a lot of great love for India. The Indian people love you. So I'm sure it has been emotional seeing it from the outside as well.
Yeah, it was. And it was hard from our point of view as well, working from a broadcasting point of view on the IPL. We were getting a lot of messages of support, people saying, look, this is keeping us going. It's something to look forward to. It's something to keep us indoors and actually help with the social distancing and stuff like that and staying safe. So from that point of view, we could say that we were doing a good thing by broadcasting. But I think it was inevitable once the virus got inside one of the bubbles. The tournament was obviously untenable, so it's a real shame that it did. And for those people who seen it as a lifeline, then it's a real shame. But I think it's the right thing at the moment, and absolutely, I think the IPL moved quickly and decisively once they realised that it was untenable. So may India get back on its feet as soon as possible, because like you say, I love the place and I love the people.
Thanks for that, Swanee. We love you too. Okay, let's welcome David Milan to the podcast and let's put pressure on him straight away. What are you expecting from this interview, Swanee?
I tell you what I do know is that David is the funniest, the most intelligent and the most handsome player to play for England in the last 20 years. So I'm expecting him to absolutely dazzle us, to be honest.
Definitely number three.
No pressure,
three.
David.
No, definitely number three. I'm not sure about the first two.
And there's no pressure either because our last guest was Pat Cummins. So, I mean, yeah. Follow Pat if you can.
No, David, thank you so much, actually, for taking out the time to be with us. I apologize for this question in advance, but how many times have you been called David in your life?
David, funny enough, I've actually just joined a bat company, and at the bottom of the bat, they wrote my name, but they spell it D-E-V-I-D, so it's David Milan, and then on the sticker that's supposed to be David Milan, they've put David Milan. So that just shows you how many people get it wrong, literally from week to week. But yeah, look, it's Dawid, it's David, it's like there's so many variations of it, but, you know, all sounds the same, it all works, it all gets my attention, so...
I just spent 2 months in a commentary box trying to convince the Indian commentators that it was Dawid and not David.
Even when
I'd read it out, I'd say, look, it's Dawid. They go, David. I go, no, come on, Sonny, it's Dawid. David. And they just smile. So in the end, I just said, yeah, you know what, it's Dave. Dave to his mates. Dave
Malone. To be fair, it's actually Dawid, so instead of Dawid. So it's, yeah, it's a silly name. Let's just be honest.
No worries. I'm in the same boat, so no one gets my name either. But I mean, since we're talking about clearing up misconceptions in a way, there's a lot of perceptions when you kind of first burst onto the scene that you're South African. But, you know, tell us the story. So you're born in London suburbs, moved to South Africa, play for England now.
Yes. So born in England. So the way the story goes, my dad obviously is South African. He came over... as a dentist back in the day, met my mom, obviously had myself, my brother and my sister. And then as the story goes, my dad picked me up from school one day and saw me walking with my shoelaces undone, socks down, shirt untucked, looking scruffy as hell, and decided that's not how he wanted us to get brought up. So he quit his job and flew us straight over to South Africa and put us into a school where there's a bit of discipline. Still had the cane in those days, so still, even when I was 18, still got the cane. You know, if you misbehaved and so on. So that was why we decided to move back to South Africa as a family. Not that I had much choice. And then when I finished with school, I came over to do a gap year. I coached at Oundle School up in Peterborough, Northampton, and played for Peterborough Town Cricket Club on a Saturday in the village.
I'm so sorry about that, by the way. Peterborough Town, the most desolate place on the planet, for those who don't know.
Well, I actually stayed with your mate, Swanee, with what's his name?
Ajaz Akhtar.
Cameron Wake. Yeah, well, I played with Ajaz Akhtar. I think he claimed I was the worst overseas player they've ever had, which is fair enough. I didn't score a run.
Sounds like Ajaz. He'd put that forward.
But yeah, I stayed with John Wake for a bit up in Oundle. He was the master of cricket at Oundle School. You know, so, and then I just did a few trials for the MCC Young Cricketers, scored some runs. Clive Radley gave me a contract, and then Middlesex came knocking. And, you know, I was at Middlesex for, 12, 13 years before moving to Yorkshire, and then things obviously worked out from there.
I tell you, it's a brilliant story, but one thing that's a bit strange about it is that normally in England, we only take people who were born in South Africa and let them play for our country. The fact you're born in England really throws a spanner in the works. I don't know what to make of this.
I think they realised that too late. I think they thought I was born in South Africa.
Well, he's actually English. Probably English. Oh, dear God. What are we going to do about this?
I know, with Dawid Johannes Milan, as English as they come.
So you make your T20 debut against South Africa. Were there some sort of mixed emotions? Because, you know, okay, yeah, so you're making your debut, and it's an international debut. It's a huge milestone in your lifetime. And then it's against South Africa. So mixed emotions there?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, as a kid growing up, you know, I'd be lying if I was going to say I wanted to play cricket for England. You know, I grew up in South Africa, all my schooling and age group, and all my idols were South Africans. So, you know, to be able to make your debut for England against the country that you always wanted to play for as a kid when you were growing up, as I said, that's all you really know when you're sort of 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and you're sort of supporting a team that your father supports. That's what you... sort of look at, you know, so to play against them and to play against, you know, AB de Villiers was playing in that game, who was one of my heroes growing up as a kid. And suddenly, you know, you wanted to play with him for South Africa, and then suddenly you're playing against him, even though it was 10 years later. But, you know, it was a surreal experience. My father was there as well. They flew over to come and watch the game. So I think he had mixed emotions. I think he wanted me to score runs, but South Africa to win at the time. But I think he's changed his allegiances at the moment. Yeah, but, you know, looking back at it, it was sort of something that you wouldn't have been able to write as a kid, that you'd grow up in South Africa and end up playing international cricket against that country. So, you know, it was a dream come true.
And it went pretty well, to be fair, that debut.
Yeah, it actually got me a few test knocks as well out of that innings. I think Trevor Bayliss watched that and sort of said, well, why have we not looked at this bloke before? This is what Paul Farbrace told me. It was like he goes forward when it's full and he goes back when it's short. And I was like, it can't be that simple, TV. But, you know, that was that was sort of his philosophy. It was just so simple. But, yeah, look, it went really well. You know, I think part of my philosophy of that game, you know, it was a three-match series. You know, all the other guys that got given opportunities in that game, you know, we were all told we were given chances. You know, all the other guys got given two chances, and I got told I was just going to get the one at the end. You know, so I made a conscious effort to make sure that when I had that chance, I was going to make sure I took that chance. And you know, you can't sort of plan to score runs, but, you know, the way that I went out and played was to go and show that I can play in this England white ball era and play the way that they want you to play. You know, thankfully it came off, otherwise you probably wouldn't be speaking to me right now.
It was, but I remember that I was commentating on that game, and I remember just you coming in. And of course, I knew you from years of county cricket. And you know, when a player comes in and there's general sort of befuddlement from especially the opposing commentators and people around the box, and people are asking you, saying, is he any good? Is he any good? And so I'm so glad you did, because I backed you up. I said, this boy can bat, seriously. Just watch this, he'll be fine. But even then, I'm thinking, come on, mate, don't let me down. I've just put my name on this. And you did. I don't think I've ever been more chuffed at someone's debut as I was at yours, because I bigged you up massively. And then when you batted like that, I just walked out going, well, look, I know I should be a selector. I know I should, but we're letting Ed Smith and James Taylor do it, the clowns. So once they're finished, I'll have a go.
Yeah, it was a tough one, because... you know, looking back at it, you know, I never really get talked about in county cricket. You know, I don't reverse sweep seamers, and I don't make the sort of highlight packages on social media and stuff like that, which is the sort of things that catch people's attention. But, you know, when you actually look at runs and numbers in county cricket, people are still sort of amazed. And I'm not trying to big myself up, but it was more just because of that debut, the fact that a lot of people were sort of saying, "How? Where's this guy come from?" and what have you. But, I'd actually scored quite a lot of runs in county cricket in 2020 cricket, and even 50-over cricket. You know, 50-over cricket is probably my strongest format. And considering I've played more test cricket than ODIs, sort of baffles me a little bit, because I definitely wouldn't say test cricket would be my strongest or one of my strongest.
But it's much better to be that way around, to have people look at the records and go, hang on, Jesus, look how good he is. How have we missed that? Than the other way around.
Yeah.
Then, like, go, God, this bloke can play, and then look at his figures and just gently push them under the dashboard. Oh, yeah, actually, we've just given someone 40 tests and he averages 6.
Well, that is pretty
much
good.
It's better to be your way around.
Yeah, and it drives me more. It drives me more to keep proving a point, to keep proving people wrong. You know, even now when you play, you have one bad game and suddenly people are saying, why is this guy in the team? Well, you're in the team because you perform for a period of time. You know, so it is something that sort of frustrates you a little bit, in the sense that, you know, you feel like even if you score runs, it's not good enough. And when you don't score runs, it definitely isn't good enough. So it's just because, you know, you weren't sort of one of these guys that were identified as a 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old and isn't this social media sort of phenomenon, as if you want to put it that way. So it does get a bit frustrating, but that's, you know, the nature of the game. At the end of the day, if you score runs, that's all that matters.
You know, it's so interesting to hear you speak like that and speak from the heart, because you are right now the number one batsman in this format in T20 cricket. I mean, what are the expectations? Because you mentioned this before, you can't always walk out there and score, you know, a 40-ball 100. You know, there's immense pressure maintaining that sort of, you know, that I need to prove people wrong. So what is that the mindset that you have?
Yeah, well, I think we're all a sort of product of our own performances. You know, when you've had some good, consistent performances, people expect that all the time. And that's the beauty of what comes with sport. You know, if you start badly and then do well for a little bit, people sort of get onto your sort of trends. But if you perform consistently for a period of time, people sort of start expecting that. You know, 2020 cricket is a game where you fail a lot more than you succeed. There's, you know, there's a lot of things that can go wrong in a T20 game. I mean, you can face 10 balls and hit 10 of the best shots you've ever hit straight to cover or straight to mid-wicket or straight to mid-off, and you can be 0 of 10, but you've actually not done anything different to what you did the game before. You know, so when you sort of suddenly have that pressure, you're number one, you have to score. And I think the one thing with this England team that we're playing in is there's such a lot of good players that aren't playing as well, that are in the backup, that it sort of seems that as soon as you don't score runs once or twice, there's suddenly someone else needs to come in and something needs to change and something needs to be like this. And it's not just for me, this is just for everyone that's part of the team. It sort of feels like there's always, you know, as soon as you lose a game, there's suddenly, oh, we should pick this option and someone else should come in and someone this should do. This is all from the outside, obviously, and not from the inside. The inside of the team is totally different. The way Morgs and Chris Silver would protect us from the outside and make us know where we stand sort of makes life a lot easier. You know, from their management skills and their personal skills and how they treat us. But yeah, the pressure's always going to be there, I think, no matter who you are, what you've done. You know, it's just about trying to close off those things from the outside, sticking to what you do. And if that's not good enough, then that's unfortunately not good enough for the team. But rather do it your way.
I think a good thing, actually, I'm glad you said that about Morgie and Silvers looking after you from the inside the group. Because one of the things I found amazing when I left sort of the sanctity of the England dressing room, the safety of the England dressing room, was just how much bullshit is spoken on the outside. And I mean, I love most of the guys who work in the press. There's a couple of dickheads there are in any team. But for the most part, they really know their cricket. And even some of them, sometimes they'll look at you and they'll say things that, you know, from the team's perspective, just have no patience. They're knee-jerk reactions, like demanding this, demanding that. And it's amazing when you're in the team, honestly, just cherish it and look after that. Because Morgie, one of the reasons I think he's the best captain in world cricket by miles is the fact that he came in 2015 and said, we're going to play this ultra-aggressive approach where you will be back to the hilt by me and you won't be dropped. It's not in one game and I'll listen to the noise in the press room and then you're out. So I think that is, for me, why Morgie's so good. That's why players like you can come in and have that freedom to actually play and score the runs and perform like you have. Because, honestly, if the press are in charge, exactly like you say, one bad game, two bad games as a team, and it's scapegoat time. So I'm so glad that it's still that strong from inside. I knew Spoon to be like that, Chris Silverwood, because he's just as solid and down to earth as they come. But Morgie is an unsung hero of epic proportions for me, for that reason.
Yeah, he is. And I think the thing that, you know, I don't really want to talk out too much, but the press that I don't understand is when you start a series, Morgs will tell you that you're going to play the first two games of the five-match series or you're going to play all five. So no matter what happens, even if you get three noughts in a row, you're still going to be playing the last two. And he gives you that peace of mind to be able to go out and play that way that he wants you to play. So you don't walk out thinking today's going to be my last innings, today's going to be my last knock, and then you sort of go into your shell or suddenly play a different way to what you want. So, you know, it does make me laugh when you sort of listen to the commentators before a game saying they should do this, maybe this is going to be, whereas Morgs already decided what the team is going to be and what his batting lineup's going to be before. Obviously, that changes depending on if someone has a real stinker or conditions and what have you like that. But you know, just the way they are able to put you at ease and to make you feel like you are 100% part of that team is the reason that this England white ball team, I've not been part of that 50 over cricket, but it's exactly the same both ways through, and on how successful they've been because of all that. You know, and all I can comment on is you know, I've played 20 odd games for England, or 25 games, whatever it is, in 2020 cricket. In that time, you know, it's been Bairstow needs to bat three, then suddenly Banton needs to bat three, then Stokes, then it's Hales, then it's someone else. I've forgotten someone else. Then it'll be the next one again. So, you know, in 24 games, you perform, but there's still suddenly six guys that should be batting there instead of you. It's amazing how it sort of it sort of works. But thankfully, you know, the way Morgs and Spoons, as I said, the way they sort of protect you from that and reassure you that you're the man at the time, you know, that doesn't mean that you're going to play the next series. That doesn't mean I'm going to get picked for this next series against Sri Lanka. But it just means that at that moment, you're the man that they're backing. And that's the confidence that you need.
But that allows you to perform, and then you are going to be the next player. I mean, you've had the proof of the pudding is in the eating. You've had 24 games. You've got 1,000 runs, for goodness sake. So I think it's brilliant. I'll take my hat off to you, A, for scoring those runs and performing when you've been given the chance. But more importantly, I think the amount of players who missed out over the years because they didn't have that backing, didn't have that same sort of security and knowledge that, you know, this isn't the last day of my life if it goes wrong. There is another knock tomorrow. Just think what we could have been. We could have been world champions 20 years ago.
And David, I just want to add to what Swanee is saying, because you've played so much franchise cricket around the globe. You know, there's a lot of experience and knowledge of different sort of pitches, conditions, players that you played against. Now, that is something you take when you walk into an England dressing room.
Yeah, it is. You know, I think the pressures, and it's something I know, you know, people in England criticise players going to the IPL. They criticise playing so much. I know the county sort of don't really like their players playing too much franchise cricket in the off-season, so that they're fresh for the county season and what have you. But the pressure that comes with being an overseas player in these franchises, so to be one of three or one of two or one of four that you're playing, and knowing that you're there to perform, and if you don't perform, there's going to be another overseas that's going to take your place. That sort of replicates the pressure of international cricket so well. You know, you have to fit into a team straight away. You have to fit into their culture, their environment. You have to be able to play the right way, score runs. And then if you're not scoring runs, you're in a total different environment. How are you going to sort of act as a person? So it teaches you so many things. But not only about your game, but about yourself as a person as well. And it actually prepares you so well for international cricket.
Yeah, I think it's brilliant that players like you can do that. And if counties grumble about it in the off-season that you're playing, just get over it, lads. It's 2021. It's 2021, not 1921, for goodness sake. Here's something for you. So you played in lots of different teams, lots of different franchises around the world. How pathetically, tediously boring is every team meeting you have now? Because every team meeting is exactly the same, just with different bullshit management speak.
Yeah.
So tell me, is there one franchise or one team who do it completely differently? Who, like, you're in the room for 5 minutes, right? This is the team, this is what we're going to do. Let's crack a beer and go to the pub.
So
tell me there's one team who do it differently.
So the only team that does it totally differently is England cricket. They're the only ones who do it totally different. And I know they're not a franchise, but, you know, there's no meetings about a meeting. There's never really, you know, as batters, there's never a batting meeting. As batters, we get around each other and we chat about it amongst ourselves, about different plans of how, you know, I'd go to Morgs and say, Morgs, we're playing against, I don't know, Pakistan this week. How do you face Wahab Riaz? What's your plan to him? And he goes, this is my plan. I find if I do this to him, I'm able to get more bat on the ball, which means I'm able to hit him for more boundaries, for argument's sake. And I'll be like, well, that's not something I thought about. So then when I get to the nets, I can try that and be like, you know what, that actually works for me, or that doesn't work. Whereas I feel a lot of times in the meeting, people's in meetings, when you have meetings about a meeting, it just sort of goes around.
It's just,
it goes around in circles.
I couldn't be more jealous of you right now, because I played in a meeting for meeting era when we would sit there and talk. The biggest loads of tosh going round circles, and everyone has their say, and everyone says something just to impress the manager that doesn't actually affect anything that you do or say. Everyone says, oh my God, Morgan, you're even better now. This is brilliant. But yeah, if you could, for me, just next time, whoever you're playing for, no matter what team it is, the next time you're in a team meeting and you look at your watch and it's now 90 minutes you've been in here and you've learnt nothing new about the game of cricket, anything whatsoever, but all the 16 different coaches are having their say, just think of me and smile, because I'll be thinking of you. Because it used to be the bane of my life.
Funny. And I'm with you. Like, I get to a stage where, you know, early on when you join new franchises and new teams and you sort of get to know how things get done and how different coaches work and so on. You know, early on, it's always exciting when you get that message on the group saying, lads, team meeting at 2 o'clock, and then batters meeting at 4 o'clock. And then, you know, it sort of becomes new. And then by the end of it, you're like, what else do we need to say in the batting?
Just leave me alone.
And then you sort of get sometimes you get the coaches as well, which is quite funny. They try and get you to interact as a team, because the last three batters meetings, we haven't batted well, but people are just sitting there. So in general, no matter whether you play Pakistan, Bangladesh, Australia, there's always something, and then they'll be like, what do you think? And then someone will just say the token sort of like catchphrase that everyone says, and everyone goes, yeah. And then you go out and get it.
I just think if we looked, how about this one? I've got a few cliches that you would have heard. Thing. So the batting's not going well. So it really is. So say you're losing 4 wickets in the first 10 overs, and you're not scoring runs. Lads, what are we going to do? I think it's important if we just look to build partnerships. And that it's all about the first 10 balls. And obviously, we're not going to not try and hit boundaries. We still look to be positive, but just like really try and maintain and nurture that partnership. Tell me that's not been said by every batsman in the whole world.
That is every batting coach, or not batting coach, that's every batting meeting down to a T. Especially if you're strong. If you're playing well, then it's like, yeah, just go on as you go along. But that's, yeah, that is definitely. And it's, you know, I think that's, you know, I think it's just because there's so much pressure on franchises, there's so much pressure on coaches, no matter who they are, no matter what they've done, no matter whether they're coaching in India, Bangladesh, Pakistan, Australia, T10, there's pressure to perform and there's pressure to do the right things. And if you're not discussing things as a team, whether it be as a batter or a bowling, you know, is that seen as, you know, we're not doing enough to make sure that we're prepared, yeah. You know, so
tick the box, cover your bases, tick the box.
Pretty much, and I don't want to criticise. Right,
you don't have to say that, I can say you that can, now, I don't play anymore.
You can say all that, because it's hard to criticise, because I've not been a coach, so I don't know what it's like when you're getting pressure from owners in whatever franchise league you're playing in, or whatever league you're playing in, you know, when they want results and they're expecting results. So I don't know how, you know, how that would feel from that point of view.
Well, I'll tell you what they should. I'll tell you one thing that would be good if other people thought, like, I mean, the biggest change in international cricket has been Owen Morgan and England and the way they've done things compared to when I played. Trust me, it's chalk and cheese. And we've gone from being one of the worst teams in the world to the best team in the world, or, you know, arguably top two. So why do other people copy that model? Honestly, because I used to sit there. So the batters meeting is that we'll build partnerships, we'll do this, and we'll look to have wickets in hand at the end. The bowlers equivalent is, and I've sat there, and bowlers tend to think they're more salt of the earth, and, you know, we won't waste time. And bowling coaches, for the most part, are very good blokes who were bowlers before, and they don't want to waste time in the meeting. But each and every one of them will say, right, the important thing is bowling partnerships, which means nothing. Doesn't matter how well I can't affect the other bloke at the other end of bowling. But get in and out of the over. So don't go for a 4 or a 6 on your first or last ball of the over. Well, duh. You don't want to go for a 4 or 6 of any ball. But it's a brilliant cliche. And the other one is, hey, and don't be afraid to, like, to give away a single to save a boundary. Oh my God! Of course I'll give away a single to save a boundary. Oh, it still makes it. Honestly, team meetings and warm ups. Oh my word. Finish them. I'm so glad I don't have to do them anymore.
Yeah, well, just to add on to that, the good thing about it is it actually encourages you to speak to your teammates outside of a meeting point of view. So you actually end up learning. You know, I wasn't hitting the ball as well in India as I'd have liked in the first, after the first game was irrelevant, but the second and the third game. And, you know, walking down with Joss one of the days and just asking him what he does differently on a certain type of wicket, you know, a wicket that we were expecting. We played on wickets that were slightly different to what we expected to start with, and then they got better. You know, and just asking him what worked for him, and he would sort of say, like, I'd get myself into this position, I'd look to hit this area, and it might be something that I thought of or haven't thought of. And if it's something you haven't thought of, it's something that you can then practice and put into use. Whereas in a batters meeting, Joss would never say that. You know, players would sort of just say, as you say, they say the basic things just to get the meeting through and done. But when you speak to someone on a one-on-one basis and you talk to them about their game plans, but how they would play, I don't know if the leggy is at Chahal that played I think it's Chahal, the leggy that played for India. You know, you. Something that Stokesy would pick up, I might not pick up, and something that I pick up, Morgs might not pick up. So we're sort of encouraged to speak amongst each other quite a lot. And it actually feels like we grow our game quicker because we're learning from each other who are, you know, and I'm in a great position where I'm learning from the best white ball players that have ever you know, played the game for England, and how they've dominated world cricket for 4 or 5 or 6 years. So, you know, it gives me an insight of learning from the best instead of speaking, you know, maybe listening to a meeting, which, you know, as you said, people don't really open up as much.
Well, it used to be, what you've just described there, it used to be done over a pint at the end of play in the bar. Thankfully, to be honest, it's a much more professional game these days, so you don't just go and get a beer and stand in a pub and talk. But when I first started playing, the difference between when I first started and you would sit and you would talk to your teammates, to the opposition in county cricket, and your captain would tell you to go and find the spinner in the opposition and talk to him. And he might be plastered in a corner, but you'd learn the game there. I mean, that sort of one-on-one talking is way more effective. Coaches, if you're listening, is way more effective than a bowler's meeting or a batsman's meeting, where cliches are spouted out more than politicians would. And Darren Millar said so, and he's number one in the world.
Don't quote me on that one. That's what
no,
he's No,
Graham Swan said so. And he's not number one in the world. Oh dear.
Yeah, but it is an interesting subject. So not only the meeting bit, but just the fact that you, as you touched on, going to speak to opposition players, you know, is something that I've always tried to do. I've always personally tried to sound out, like, when we're playing against Surrey, I'd try and catch Kumar Sangakkara, who I admire as a you know, as a fellow batter, as a left-hander, someone that
to be fair.
Someone that I beat, and it's you know, guys like that are so approachable as well. So even like Chris Gayle playing for Punjab Kings, you know, I've played against Chris a couple of times in the franchises, you know, I've spoken to, but I've never really thought that I could speak to him about batting. I was always a bit like, gosh, this is Chris Gayle. He's the best T20 player that's ever played the game. Like, how do I approach Chris Gayle? But then when you're suddenly in a team with him and you ask him a question, the knowledge that he actually has and that he gives you and that he's willing to freely give you without sort of being scared of speaking to him, it's amazing how you learn from players. And you might not take anything from them, but you might just take that one small thing that you can add to your game that can make you, you know, score 4 or 5 runs more off the same amount of balls, whatever it may be, and that suddenly can change a game and win you a game. And that's something that, you know, I think with the COVID situation now, it's probably gone out of the game. You know, you're not allowed to mix with the opposition. You know, it's a bit interesting to see how that changes over the next couple of years.
I tell you what, let me just ask you quickly, because let me go back to that while we're on that, about talking to other players. After that debut against South Africa, were you able to go and talk to AB de Villiers then? Was that the first time you met him? I mean, because I was started playing. I didn't know these players. I'd never met them before. You're like a little kid, aren't you, at Christmas?
Yeah, it was. But I was quite lucky. In 2008, I played against South Africa. We had a touring team. Middlesex played against South Africa at Uxbridge just before the Test. I don't know if you were you playing Test cricket then, 2008, Swanee?
Just started. The end of that year I started.
End of that year. So that was the middle of the English summer. And, you know, after one of the day's plays, AB was doing his hair. He still had hair at the time. So
before the horse's hair came along.
So he was doing his hair then. I spoke to him in Afrikaans, actually, and he sort of was a bit like, oh, because there was before the days when you had your name on your back, I think. I can't remember if he had a name on our backs then or whatever, but, you know, obviously Milan would stand out as South African, you know, and then we played against them, had a bit of a chat to him. I got 60 in that game. And then about 2 weeks later, we played that T20 quarter final at the Oval, and I got 100 in that. And I turned my phone on, and I had a message from AB. He messaged OA Shah and got my number off OA Shah and to message me and say, "Hey, bud, awesome work. That was a hell of a knock."
English, you know, or in Afrikaans?
In Afrikaans. So that was that. So that's
the lekker bruyar, man.
But that just shows you what the guys are like. You know, they're absolute superstars and they're heroes, but they're so down to earth and they're so appreciative of if someone does well. And, you know, since then, I've actually been quite lucky. I've actually, like, driven past AB running at some point, like, wherever I've been, and then you'd send him a message and he'd reply straight away. And funny enough, we actually have the same guys that manage us both now. So I was actually on the plane over coming to here. We were both on the same domestic flight, so it's amazing how you sort of cross paths after that, which is great, considering you've, you know, you sort of looked up to these guys when you were kids.
Well, I talked about this with Pat Cummins last week. You basically get to become tight with your boyhood heroes.
Yeah, which is well, that's I wouldn't awesome. Say I'm tight with Avi. Yeah, I'd love to be tight with Avi. Yeah, but you know, he played for Middlesex and what have you. So you know, I felt like I built a good relationship with a guy, as you said, that I idolised. Which is you know, it's just like you can just message Avi whenever I want. Like. You know, imagine telling your 16-year-old self that, you know what, you can just message AV whenever you want, and whether he replies or not, it's a different story.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I just had to ask because I found it so interesting when you're talking about meeting your heroes and seeing that they're so down to earth. Can I just say, David, that as a fan, how cool it was to see you know, the number one T20 batsman right now, getting your IPL debut cap from by far one of the most iconic T20 batsmen ever, Chris Gayle. I mean, what was that moment like? I always want to know what happens when someone gives you your cap, you know, what do they say? And it's Chris Gayle, it's the universe boss. I'm pretty sure he has something, you know, very Chris Gayle-like to say.
Yeah, look, it's always a proud moment when you make your debut for any team. You know, to play in the IPL has been a dream of mine, so to be able to get that cap, disappointing that the tournament sort of has been postponed just as I got that cap. I'd have liked to hopefully get one or two more games to show what I can do. But you're right, to get your cap is a special moment. Usually you get it from, you know, wherever you play, it's either someone who's probably done more than you or someone that you really respect or a really good mate of yours that hands your cap over. You know, so to receive my cap from Chris Gayle, who, as I said, has arguably been the best T20 player in the world, you know, for a number of years, he's transformed this game, and basically the way he's sort of played, it's he as you said, he's the most iconic player. To be totally honest, I can't actually remember what he said. It was a bit of a blur. He has to speak really clearly sometimes for me to understand him, or Chris. But you know, it was just sort of along the lines of, you know, it's a good moment for you, you know, good luck, show us what you can do, and have a good game, pretty much. But what a character that guy is. You know, he's great to have around the team. He's a lovely bloke, as I said. He's open. He's willing to share his knowledge. He's willing to share a laugh with you. You know, so you can see why he's been so successful over the years.
You mentioned characters. There are a lot of characters, but you know, I'd be interested to know not just some of the younger guys, because I saw them trying to teach you a little bit of Punjabi, which always happens. Some Punjabi moves as well. But you know, you got someone like K.L. Rahul. You've got Chris Gayle, and then you got someone like Anil Kumble. So, what were some of the sort of conversations that you were having? Because as you mentioned, this was your first IPL experience.
Yeah, it was actually because of COVID and because of the training situation and stuff like that, it was quite hard. So if you weren't part of the sort of initial 12, that sort of 12 was sort of trained sort of separately, so you didn't really get to to mix too much with Cahill at sort of training days. You could see him in the hotel and have sort of a breakfast and sit across him and what have you. You know, and obviously sad to see that he had that sort of operation for him to miss. You know, he was having a great IPL. Anil on the other end is just such a nice guy. He's so quiet. And, you know, when he does speak to you, he actually speaks sense. Not like a lot of guys like Swanee who just carry on for the sake of it and they just talk just to get their word count up. But yeah, no, it's, you know, it is, and I touched on this earlier, that's the beauty of franchise cricket, is that you get to mix with different people from different cultures that are different, have different personalities, that you have to learn pretty quickly how to work with those people. You know, with Chris, you can sort of speak anything. With Cahill, you're still sort of, as you know, he's captain, he's a really down-to-earth guy, really welcoming as well. Anil is exactly the same, but a lot quieter than the other two. So, you know, it's trying to work out how you sort of mix with these guys and how you interact with them to sort of get to know them along the journey.
I mean, that's, a lot of people will be shocked to hear that because of COVID, and it's good to hear that it was so well played that you couldn't all just mix, and it wasn't just everyone training at the same time and in and out. So there were such strict protocols within the bubble.
Yeah, they were. You know, the bubble was really strict, especially with the training, what have you. You know, we had a 2-hour slot, and you had to be in and out with if you weren't allowed to be over for 1 minute. You know, so everything was done, you know, extremely well to make sure we were extremely well protected. And then it sort of, as you said, when because of COVID as well, you had a squad of 26 players, and you're not fitting 26 players through in a 2-hour slot, so it became quite tough for the coaches to juggle sort of who was in and around. So, you know, as I said, when you were part of that initial 11, 12 and maybe 14 man squad that they were, you know, thinking about playing in the next game, they were sort of given the priority to train and to get themselves prepared, you know, which when you're sort of not part of that, it does become quite hard when you're in a bubble. You know, from my own experience, once I finished this quarantine, now I'd have been in a bubble for 6 months and 2 days, and I've been out for 3 weeks in between, and I've only played 19 games of cricket. So it's amazing if you think about the time that you're actually away just to play 19 games of cricket. You know, it's extremely tough. So, you know, for me, the training was the bit that kept me going, to be able to get out of the hotel and hit cricket balls. So when you couldn't do that as often as you want, that's when the bubble started becoming tough. And when you were sort of outside of the bubble, that's when it sort of became, well, not outside of the bubble, when you were actually at training, you could actually have fun with your teammates, and you could, you know, learn, and you can practice, and you can work with different coaches, because that's what the IPL and franchise cricket's about. It's not just about playing games and scoring runs and earning money. It's about actually learning and developing as a player.
Do you think that the lack of cricket you've had over, you know, 19 games in 6 months is just almost a joke when you think about it? Do you think that will make you hungrier or more appreciative of every time you bat from now on? Because I know in England, like, especially when you play county cricket, you can get very blasé about batting every day. You just think, well, it's part and parcel. But do you think you'll be hungrier this year because of it?
Yeah, I hope so. I'd be worried if I'm not. I might as well be retiring if I'm not getting hungry for it. But
trust me, but, don't retire.
No, I'll be clinging on. I'll be like Darren Stevens. Someone's going to have to throw me out of there. but no, like, it's, yeah, look, I want to play cricket as badly, but then there's, you know, there's the balance of, you know, the mental fatigue that you're getting from the bubble is probably the same as what you'd be playing for 5 or 6 months either way. Maybe not to that extreme, but it'd be probably be, you know, if you're in a bubble for 6 months, it'd probably be like you've just played cricket for 2 months and you've actually concentrated constantly in the pressures and the stuff. Because that's the other thing about the bubble, is that people, you actually, you see more stuff on social media, you get sort of, you know, you see more stuff. So it makes it hard. But look, yeah. I love playing cricket. I want to score as many runs as I possibly can every time I get an opportunity. I would say I'd be hungrier to play. It's just trying to find that balance of actually being able to get out of the bubble and be able to sort of have sort of a normal life to some extent, and play cricket, because I don't think this bubble is sustainable, to keep the players in continuous bubbles like this sustainable.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough to be away from family, as you mentioned. I mean, Swanee, you're also going through the same thing. You've been away from your missus. I got to ask you something, though. What does your missus think about the Milky Way boss? Where does that come from?
The Milky Way boss. That was Mark Wood being the fool that he is. He's a funny man, Mark Wood, one of the good ones in cricket. I think it was in South Africa. I think I'd just broken Chris Gayle's record or something like that about the quickest to 10 50s in international cricket, something along those lines. And he said, jokingly, he said, "Well, he's the universe boss, and we've got the Milky Way boss." So that was the first time. I don't know why he's gone Milky Way boss, but he realized
the Milky Way is smaller than the universe.
I know he's a funny man. He's not sometimes the sharpest tool in the shed, but I'll take it as a compliment from him either way.
Yeah, you should have got multiverse boss. That'd have been a bit better. How did your wife react to that? That you're now sort of almost like a Marvel character, like a Guardian of the Galaxy.
My wife honestly couldn't care less. she doesn't really enjoy cricket. Whenever I tell her about the cricket, she goes, "Did you get more than naught or not?" And I'll be like, "Yeah, I got more." She goes, "That's a good day then." And then that's the sort of conversation over, which is quite good because then you don't talk about cricket.
But David, you're number one.
Yeah, I know. But she's from Scotland. She's not really been grew up with cricket and what have you. I think she's more a football hooligan.
Should have probably played Gandhi,
she's a football
hooligan,
so she would be the one in the back throwing beers and stuff like that and screaming abuse at the TV, so she's one of those ones. So luckily she doesn't know much about cricket, otherwise it could be chaos if she comes to the games and sits in the boxes if she knew anything about it. But no, it's I think that's the good thing, is that I actually have the balance of a wife that's not really too interested in cricket, that I don't have to be talking about cricket 24/7, that doesn't really get involved in what I do. She'll ask the odd question of how'd you go today, like my IPL debut. Actually, she messaged saying how did today go, and I went, yeah, right, I probably missed out on a few here or there. And she went, well, I watched and I thought you were rubbish. I was like, there you go, you know nothing about it. If you think I'm rubbish, then I think everyone must think I'm rubbish.
I think I'm falling for your wife here. This is brilliant. she's a blunt football hooligan, basically.
Oh yeah, don't quote her on that. She's going to kill me if that comes out, that quote. But yeah.
I used to get a very similar thing that from my wife didn't know cricket at all. So the first time she ever watched me play, she came to Nottingham and I put her in the wags box and she got drunk with all the other wags. And then I got 5 wickets and I got 60 odd. Best game of my life. And it was on telly, got man of the match, proud as punch. And I said to her afterwards, "How did you think I got on? Did you enjoy that?" And she said, "I didn't know which one of the spin bowlers you were. The other spin bowler was Samit Patel."
So, similar body shape, to be fair.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, now maybe, but at the time I was live. I mean, I looked like I was devastated. I mean, he's a foot shorter than me and of Indian descent, but you know, I'll go with it. I decided to marry her on the spot, actually, because I thought I will never get shouted at for getting caught cover anymore.
It's funny how life finds a way to level you out, even if you are the number one T20 batsman in the world. But you know what? Let's move on to our Dare to Declare segment. This is brought to you by Betway. Let's talk about the hot topic, because Swanee, we got the number one man here. You know, I mean, it's a spot he'd like to keep for a while. I'd love to get your thoughts on this as well, Graham. Who do you think, David, right now is the best batsman in the format? It doesn't even have to be, you know, a current player. Who do you think is the best batsman in this format and why?
There's a few, actually, and I think, you know, the rankings, obviously, you know, in world cricket, in international cricket, get done by, obviously, consistency and runs and what have you. But, you know, there's guys like Pollard that bat at 6 who will have a small impact in a game, but it's actually a massive impact in a game. So he might only get 20 off 10 balls, but it's a bigger impact than someone that might get a 50 off 35 balls at the time, because that's at a crucial time in the game. You know, I still, honestly, and I just watching the guy go about it as a 37-year-old, AB de Villiers in T20 cricket, for a bloke who sort of doesn't play for 4 months and then suddenly plays again. I think the way that he can go, the fact that he can sort of play any role, he can bat at 5, he can bat at 3, he can finish, he can set up an innings. I think he's by far you know, the best T20 player in domestic cricket, and I know he doesn't play international cricket anymore, going around. You know, I don't think there's many better than him at the moment.
I reckon that you can't argue with stats. So Darren Millan for me. I tell you what I do like about the IPL, though. One thing that I think is one of the reasons it is one, if not the best T20 tournament in the world, is that every team has absolute match winners, like game turners. Like Darren said, then a 20 from 10 balls at the right time can be more important than a 50 or 40 at the top of the innings or whatever. And the IPL games are never over. The chasing team is never out of it. If they've got someone like Pollard or Andre Russell or AB, Virat Kohli, Darren Millan, Joss Butler, Ben Stokes, every team has got one or two unbelievable strikers of the ball. I've not even mentioned a single Australian there on purpose. but you know what I mean? I think it is such a good tournament, and that's why it's so brilliant to watch. I mean, those last couple of games, and also the grounds that are played on. People don't realise, back in England especially, how ridiculously hard it is to bowl at some of these grounds. Like the Kotla in Delhi, if you're a spin bowler or a medium pacer, or in fact, even Jasprit Bumrah, you're going for more than 50 off your four overs on a good batting wicket. It was a beach last year that turned square and no one could get a run. And this year, what did Karan Pollard got 80 off about 20 balls to win the game? I mean, that is just bonkers. So I don't think you can say there's just one player who's the best in the world. Every team has potentially on the night the best player in the world playing in their team. That's why it's so good.
Well, it kind of sets it up brilliantly the way that you mention it, because it's a hot topic. You can either talk about statistics and numbers and rankings, but we'd be chuffed about the fact that we had the number one T20 batsman joining us in the Players Lounge podcast. So, you know, we've spoken so much about pressure. Let's increase the pressure a little bit. David, you offer some quick fire predictions?
Oh my gosh. Okay, let's go.
Oh, no. Okay, it's really easy. It's just, like, say the first thing that comes to mind, okay? So, the IPL is suspended, but we're assuming that it's going to come back. And, you know, you'll be back wearing the Punjab jersey. So, your IPL winner and the runner-up.
Gosh, the winner. I'd love to say Punjab Kings, but we've got a big hill to climb to get there. I like the way Delhi have been playing. I really like the way they've, you know, things have been going their way. They've got a good balanced team. You know, I don't think you can ever write off the Mumbai Indians. So I'd probably say that those two, the way those two are going. Chennai Super Kings have been brilliant, but it depends where you're going to move to. If you move to the UAE, it might be slightly different with the different grounds and stuff there. So it'd be interesting to see.
Okay, so David, who is the young player in this Punjab team who's going to take the world by storm?
I really like the look of Bishnoi, the leg spinner. I think he's got something about him. He's bowls a really good pace, a lot quicker than most leggies, and got some good variations. And he's still really, really young. So I think he's got a good journey ahead of him if he continues on that track.
So Kale should be okay. I'm guessing, you know, he would be in contention by the time it resumes. So who would you be your guess for the orange cap? Because I know that he's in contention, and the purple cap, most wickets.
I hope Kale gets the orange cap, which means that we'll potentially win some more games. You know, if when he scores runs, we do well. You know, so who's the current orange cap at the moment?
Shikhar Dhawan.
Shikhar Dhawan, well, he's been playing fantastically well. If he keeps on that route, I don't think anyone's going to catch him. I'd probably say one of those two could get that. I think the other guys have got a long way to go to catch those two with the amount of runs that they've scored. From a bowling point of view, I know is it Harshal who's got it from RCB, but I think, you know, I think Jasprit Bumrah is such a serious bowler. I can see him sort of catching him at some point.
Who would be the MVP if you had to pick an MVP at the end of this IPL?
Well, if Kieran Pollard can keep doing what he's doing and winning your games, which you probably shouldn't be winning from the position that they're in, and he can keep impacting them moving forward, then I think he'd be a contender for that, because he bats, bowls, fields, leadership as well that he adds in that team.
And if you were playing fantasy cricket, if you were part of one of those fantasy leagues, David, who would be the first name on your team sheet?
I'd have to say like a Ben Stokes or someone like that, someone that can bat and bowl. Yeah, I'd say someone like that, him or Pollard or a Butler, someone like that, who can do two aspects or disciplines.
I'd go for mine would be Dawid Malan.
But get me in the top three, please, Swanee.
Yeah, no problem.
Pick me in
that's
the top
exactly
three.
Where you're at.
No, I keep batting at four in these franchises.
One thing I thought about doing for this, because there's all the fancy cricket for this IPL, was to pick all the English guys. And if you get all the English guys out and you see their performances, you do really well. The English boys really perform. Sam Curran, no one's spoken about Sam Curran. He's having a hell of a tournament, you know. Mm. Little Northampton Sam, born in Northampton.
Yeah, he's been brilliant. He's like unbelievable potential. And he just gets stronger and stronger and keeps improving every year. I think the IPL
and
yet, was something that
looks younger and younger.
He does. He does. Good, but it was noticeable actually when he came back from the IPL. It was either last year's one or the year before. I can't remember which one it was. But watching him bat in the nets, how different and how much more power he had and stronger base. And how clearer he was on knowing his game with the ball and stuff like that. And from someone who sort of is pretty much on the outside, and you sort of like to observe and you like to watch guys, just to watch how quickly he'd learnt and improved was, you know, phenomenal for a young guy like him. And he can just keep growing and growing and growing.
No, it's not just the IPL, but of course, all of us are looking forward to the T20 World Cup. We're thinking about venues now. So if it goes according to plan and it's still in India, let's take it from that perspective. David, winner and runner-up. Come on, let's have some fun with this.
Oh gosh, you are putting me on the spot. Well, I'm gonna say England to win it. Whether I'm in that World Cup squad or not, I would like England to win that World Cup. From a runner-up point of view, you know what, like. Look, India in their home conditions will be extremely tough to beat. It just shows that most of the World Cups that are in the host country, they win. I know T20 is slightly different. But I actually think the West Indies are a team to watch out for when they have all their team. They're going to have all their players available. You have a batting lineup of Lewis, Simmons, Gale, Pooran, Hetmyer, Pollard, Russell, Bravo, Holder, like Narine, like you've got unbelievable players suddenly available. So I think they could be a team that could challenge in that World Cup. And to be fair, I think all the teams are actually really good, considering we're playing in India. You know, Pakistan are obviously a fantastic team in subcontinent conditions and in general. So I'm the team that come second behind England, if I had to say England were to win. I don't actually know, because there's so many, but I wouldn't write India off in their own country.
Well, England will obviously win, and then who cares who comes second, to be honest. First, second place is a losing place. I think what will be amazing, actually, that five matches that England and India played in Ahmedabad, I think was just a dress rehearsal for what could be the well 2020 final. I think if it goes ahead in India, that's where the final will be played, and it will be England-India. I think if it's in the UAE, I think that pushes it more towards England, if I'm honest.
I'm not at all surprised by any of the answers that we've gotten. But let's switch it up. Let's make it neutral, because, you mentioned the finals. So, gentlemen, World Test Championship final.
So, I think if New Zealand have their full attack and India, I think their attacks are pretty much matched. Personally, from facing both of those attacks, I think they're both unbelievable attacks. They've both ruined my careers in my test career, so they're very, very good. I think it will come down to the batting and who scores the most runs, and I'm guessing it will probably be between whoever scores the most runs between Virat and Kane. I think will probably be the ones that win. So I don't really know. I'm going to sit on the fence with that one. Swanee can give a prediction for that.
If it swings, then New Zealand have the edge. If it spins, India will win.
Ooh, that's a big shout. You've got Bumrah, Shami, Sharma, they all swing it.
No. I'll tell you, they do swing it, but they haven't got a left armer who swings it. And everybody knows if the ball's swinging, you've got a left armer, front pads get blown off all over the place.
I think Jasprit Bumrah blows your front pad off.
Jasprit's just got married. His focus is somewhere else. No, I think it's going to be an amazing game. And what I can tell you, especially if you listen in India, is that the weather over here in England is pretty good. There's been a lot of big scores scored so far in the county championship up until this week. And then all of a sudden, the ball started swinging around the corner, around corners again. And there are a lot of low scores this week. So, read what you will into that.
Okay, Swanee, we'll take that as a prediction. David, I can't thank you enough for joining us on this and especially really opening up about how tough life is right now when you're in quarantine. Because it's frankly, for a professional that doesn't get an opportunity to step out to the field, the fact that you have the ranking behind you as well, it's just awesome that you could share these sort of thoughts with us. So thank you so much for doing that. And you know, I'm pretty sure, Swanee, that this did live up to expectations, right? Like, this was a great, insightful chat. David, thank you so much for that.
I knew, I told you he would be before, and when we got on, I said, David, whoever you want to call him, will be amazing. And yeah, thank you for coming on, because you've been amazing. And what you've done in international cricket has been nothing short of stellar. And thank you again for your debut, for making me look like a hero in the commentary box rather than a villain. I'll never forget that.
I got you another couple of years there, didn't
I? Well, no, I got sacked 6 months later, but thank you anyway.
No, thanks for having me, guys. I've enjoyed it.
Legend.
So much fun speaking to David Milan here on the Players Lounge podcast. A really great, insightful chat. And we look forward to that with so many more international stars that are coming up on our episodes. So make sure you do tune into the Players Lounge podcast, subscribe to us, and look out for our Dare to Declare segments brought to you by Betway, because it's so much fun. It puts all these international athletes on the spot. You can catch us on social media. We upload the clips, join in, subscribe, and of course, make sure you get entertained. We'll see you soon.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.